Der Julis Eventer Podcast aus der Welt der Vielseitigkeit. Staffel 5.
Heute mit Folge Nummer 12 und einem besonderen Special. Eine englische Podcast-Folge mit Andrew Hoy. Ich glaube, es ist die allererste englische Folge in meinem Podcast. Deswegen auch Intro und Outro heute bilingual.
Für alle, die mich noch nicht kennen, ich bin Juliane Wirwoll. Ja, der Name hat sich geändert, der Mensch aber nicht. Vielseitigkeitsreiterin und Journalistin, nehme euch seit 2020 mit hinter die Kulissen unseres Sports zu Turnieren, Championaten und spannenden Gesprächen mit den besten Reitern der Welt.
Today with episode number 12 and it's a special, an English podcast episode with Andrew Hoy. That's why the intro and outro are bilingual. For those of you who don't know me yet, I'm Juliane Wirwoll, eventing writer and journalist. And since 2020, I've been taking you behind the scenes of our eventing sport with my own horses, but also to the big championships and exciting conversations with the best riders in the world. Heute hören wir eine Legende unseres Sports. Andrew Hoy. Ich darf ja schon einige Jahre mit ihm und seiner Frau Steffi zusammenarbeiten. Eine echte Ehre, wenn man diesen Sport so sehr liebt wie ich. Ich glaube, ich brauche ihn nicht groß vorstellen. Er war 8-mal bei Olympischen Spielen, ist sozusagen auch auf diesem Niveau eine Legende. Dabei hat er 6 olympische Medaillen, davon 3 goldene. Und er ist seit über 40 Jahren im internationalen Vielseitigkeitssport unterwegs. Ich freue mich sehr, mit ihm heute über seine jahrzehntelange Karriere, seine Philosophie, seinen Werdegang und auch seinen Blick auf die Zukunft zu sprechen. Er teilt so viele Insights mit uns. Today we hear from a legend of our sport, Andrew Hoy. I've had the privilege of working with him and his wife Steffi for several years now, a real honor when you love the sport as much as I do. I don't think that I need to introduce him. He has competed in 8 Olympic Games and is, so to speak, a legend at this level, having won 6 Olympic medals, including 3 gold, and competed in international eventing for over 40 years. I'm very pleased to be talking to him today about his decades-long career, his philosophy, his history, and his view of the future. He shares so many insights with us. Diese Folge wird präsentiert von Conky's Own, eine der führenden Marken für Pferdeernährung in Australien. Viele von euch kennen die Produkte bestimmt schon, weil Andrew seit Jahren mit ihnen arbeitet und sie fester Bestandteil seines Pferdemanagements sind. Conky's Own ist in Australien weit verbreitet und für alle australischen Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer problemlos erhältlich. Aber auch international lohnt sich ein Blick auf ihre Social-Media-Kanäle. Dort teilen sie nämlich viel fundierte Informationen rund um Pferdeernährung und Gesundheit. This episode is sponsored by Conky's Own, one of Australia's leading equine nutrition brands. Many of you will recognize the products from Andrew's daily routine, as he has been working with the brand for many, many years. Conky's Own supplements are widely available throughout Australia, and even if you're listening from outside Australia, their social media channels offer excellent educational content on horse nutrition and equine well-being. You find all the links in our show notes. Und jetzt wünsche ich euch ganz viel Spaß bei dieser Podcast-Folge. And now, I hope you enjoy this podcast episode. Andrew, it's such a pleasure to finally have you on my podcast. We're sitting in the lorry. We've been working together for a while now, but this is the first time we're sitting down for this. So welcome in my podcast.
Thank you. I don't know quite what to expect.
You've been called a legend of the sport. I also feel this. Do you still get used to that term or does it feel strange to you?
That's interesting. For me, I don't consider myself a legend. I just consider I do what I enjoy doing. I think the one thing is that I've probably been in the sport for a long time. And if the length of time that I've been involved in the sport determines whether you're a legend or not, then I probably get there for the amount of time I've spent. But I've had some absolutely amazing years and amazing performances, and then there have been low moments. But that's the same as any sporting person. They have high moments, they have low moments. And I think the thing that I've learned in the sport is that no matter what happens in the low moments, there's always a way forward, and it's just about putting the right people around you to find the way forward. And You talk with many people and they say the low moments are always greater than many more than the high moments. But I think we need to look at, all right, what do we do and why do I keep going? I keep going because, number one, I enjoy working with the horses and I get so much inspiration from the people who are part of my team and who help and support me. Now, there's so many people there. You've got what I would describe as your inner core, the people that you're with every day. And then you've got a bigger circle of people, and then you go even to a bigger circle of people that you see once every 6 months that you maybe get inspiration from, and fellow athletes that you talk with and you get some inspiration from them. And I for me the core, your core team is the real backbone of what you do. And I always try to look forward. I try to look not just at the goal that I want to achieve and what's the goal that I want to achieve. For me, I just want the horses to go really nicely. I want them to perform as well as they can perform. And if it doesn't happen, I look at it, all right, well, what can I do better? What can I do different? And I think one of my greatest strengths is I always look at my own performance first. And I think that helps me not to become too upset by other things that happen, because I am the master of my own destiny. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really am the one that determines where I get to, and I determine who influences me, whether it's be in a negative way or a positive way. And so I remember my dad said to me when I was really young, if you want to be good, make sure you place good people around you. And that's something that I've said so many times to many people. And I think it's just important that you try to do that.
I think you already said it a little bit, but you competed your first Olympics in 1984. And still competing at a very high level. So what's the secret of this keep going and extraordinary longevity?
Yeah, like it's, Los Angeles was my first Olympic Games. It was my second Olympic selection because I was selected for 1980 for what was to be Moscow, but because there was a boycott, the Americans and the Russians were fighting, and they still seem to be fighting. So went to alternative Olympics, which were in Fontainebleau. What keeps me going? It's just the fact that I want to just always improve. And has the sport changed since then? It's been massive change. And it's with that change, and I've given up. Like I used to get internally quite upset because there are so many rule changes and the sport changing. And I thought, no, forget about fighting the system and the establishment. Just if there's a change, just work out, okay, well, what do I have to do? How can I make this happen? Because there are many other people that if it's not the right thing, there'll be many other people that will speak up about it. And so I've just learned to accept these changes and move forward. And I think the sport is, from a rider safety perspective, I think it is so much better today. The care of the horses today is just so much better. We have, with the technology of today, we have so many areas where you can have your horse correctly diagnosed. There's physiotherapists, there's veterinarians, there's really good trainers out there. And so I think, and like the equipment, such as I work with Fairfax, who they do biomechanic testing of the horses and how it assists the horses in the way that the horses go. And so that really ticks my box, to use a phrase. I'm really excited by that kind of thing, and I really love to just have that opportunity of learning more every day. Every day I learn something new.
It's funny that you say this, because this is my next question. Looking back, what has changed most in eventing since you started?
Look, I think there's so many aspects. Like, years ago, it used to be very much a long endurance day. But if we go right to the very start of the competition, to the dressage phase and the inspection of the horses, even before we compete the horses, you arrive at the show and the horses are checked in, and you have to give the temperature of the horses in the pre-run up to the event, and so this is so much better. The care of the horses is so much better. Dressage phase, the quality of riding has changed immensely. And that's not a criticism by the boys and girls who were successful last century, because I say last century because I started last century. And 84 was my first Olympic Games. And I remember walking the cross-country course there, and I thought, oh, I don't know how I'm going to find my way around here, because I thought the fences were just massive. But I think the fences are equally as big today. But with the cross-country fences, you have frangible fences. And so from the welfare of the horse to the health of the rider, that has just improved so much, so much more. I think then you go through to the show jumping. The show jumping is it's a bigger course. We jump higher now than they used to jump then. The poles are lighter, so you need very good quality jumping horses. The depth of the cup is so much more shallow than it used to be. And so it is really working towards a very sensitive horse that needs to be ridden incredibly well for a good result. And that's where it's changed immensely. I would say the sport is, and I mean this in a really good way, is more explosive and dynamic than where it was years ago. It was purely an absolute endurance phase many, many years ago. And so there's tremendous speed that's involved in the sport today, at championship level, and to be really good. And the quality of equipment that even the riders are wearing, like whether it's not just the equipment from the horse, but the riders, like the helmets are so much better and safer today. The clothing that we wear is much more sport orientated than what we used to use years ago. So massive changes.
Yeah, I think so. I learned the last few days in a few other interviews that you started as a farmer in Australia, and your first three Olympic Games were as a farmer still.
Yeah, that's correct. I studied farming. I grew up on a farm. And then I went to school, which was, I was at boarding school. I used to board during the week and get home at weekends. And then I would ride my pony when I got home of a weekend, and I'd go off to a show or a competition. And then when I left school, I went to agricultural college and I studied farming. And I've spent half of my life in Australia, and while I was there, I was farming the entire time, and horses were just purely a hobby. And it was after Barcelona, where we had success and won a gold medal. I thought then I either need to do the sport full time or farming full time, because my days were just incredibly long when I was farming. Like, I'd be out of bed at 4 o'clock every morning, and I'd be doing my horses before I started work, which was always at 7:30. So I only ever had what I described, 1.5 horses, one advanced horse and one novice horse. So the more senior horse I would ride every day, or one day a week off. And then with a novice horse, I'd work it every second day, or if it was during the summer where I had more daylight, because no such thing as an arena. I just used to ride in a field. I used to use my horse around the property to go and check the cattle and the sheep and the property, and I used to jump falling down trees in the field, and so that's how I really got started. And when I moved to England, which was 1993, that was when I started to do the sport full time. And why did I move to England? Because it was the hub of the sport, and I thought, if I need a true evaluation of where I stand, I need to be in the hub of the sport. And so that's why I moved to the United Kingdom.
You also get the questions. You already get the questions before I ask. But what's the biggest difference between Australia and UK?
Size of the country.
And weather.
Weather. But it's quite interesting. The rainfall where I am in the United Kingdom, which is, for those of you listening, and you know where Burley is, I'm with Burley Horse Trials. I'm within half an hour of Burley Horse Trials in the centre of the United Kingdom. The weather and the rainfall is very similar to where I grew up in Australia.
Really?
Yeah. And so that's quite similar. I would go to shows, and I'd have much greater distances to travel, but then again, I travel great distances here in Europe as well. And so there were not the number of eventing competitions. So I used to do a lot of what we called agricultural shows, where I go and do the riding classes and the jumping classes. Then I was very involved with camp drafting. That's where you're working with cattle as well as the horse. And so I did that when I was young, and I was junior Australian champion at that. And that's become a very big sport in Australia. And then I did rodeo riding.
Really? Rodeo?
Oh, rodeo God. Rodeo riding. Yeah, but I realized that with rodeo riding, you always ended up on the floor, and that's not what I necessarily wanted to do. But I actually learned a lot from it, because it gives you the opportunity. You have to go with the buck that the cows that I was sitting on at the time. And the rodeo riders, they're amazing people, and you can, I feel you learn so much from other sports by going and watching and or even being part of these other sports. And with the camp drafting, I learned a lot from that, because you're working with two animals. You've got to get two animals running, and so you need real feel, and you need to be able to read personalities of cattle and of the horses. Like, there were men that used to live in the mountains, basically with cattle, looking after cattle, and really, really interesting mountain men, I call them. And I learned so much from those people. It was a fascinating time.
That's so interesting. A question which is maybe very difficult, but what moment in your career do you cherish the most? Can you name one?
Yeah, I would say every day I wake up because I know I've got another day. And so, but it's, I've been asked this kind of question many, many times, and what has been my greatest Olympic Games? And like, I just love Olympic Games, and I, because it's the one time, it's the one event that goes around the world, and that everyone, whether they understand anything about your sport, if you have a success, people get to know of the performance. And like the classic is, you can walk around any country and you show the trophy of badminton, they say, oh, you actually play badminton? And no. whereas if you show them a gold medal or any medal, the first thing people ask you is, can I hold it? Yeah. And so they hold it and they look at it and they say, oh, wow, this is really heavy. And then they say, oh, like, you must have been amazing on the day. Like, that's such an achievement to win a medal at Olympic Games, whether it be gold, silver or bronze. And then the last question is, what sport do you play? And I think that's the thing about the Olympic Games that is just so significant, that and I know when the Olympics are on, I watch sports that I would never watch outside of the my day-to-day program, but with Olympic Games, I'll watch it.
Yeah, me the same. The whole week or 2 weeks, and then afterwards, like, what do we do now with the whole day?
Yeah, yeah.
So you had a very nice, nice times at Olympic Games, I think. Do you, at the opposite, do you had ever a hard setback?
Olympic Games, yeah, like 2004, there was a situation where I had a fall, like about three fences from the end, and there were definitely three of us that fell one after the other.
Oh my God.
It was Heidi Anticassides, who was a Greek writer. She is a Greek writer, and she was based in the United Kingdom and very, very good writer. There was Andrew Nicholson and myself. We fell at exactly the same fence, one after the other. And I think that was just purely due to lighting. And I know at that particular time, I was, the horse was running really well. I was well within the time. I was less than a minute to the finish. And then all of a sudden, without even expecting it, because I knew exactly where the horse took off, that he took off from exactly in the right spot, all of a sudden I'm flying through the air. And so I was heading to the ground as he was galloping on. Like, it was, it was, that was a disappointing, that was a disappointing moment. But why was it a disappointing moment? It was just a disappointing moment for my own performance. And so I feel, look, this is just part of a sporting career. You have your high moments, you have your low moments. And it's the one thing that I've I've learned is, with the low moments that you have, it is normally a sporting moment, or it's a goal that you have that hasn't actually happened. And the really, what I always do is I take a step back and I reflect on the moment, and could I have done anything to prevent it? What could I do next time if I was to be asked to do exactly the same thing, or has something happened that I couldn't feel that was about to happen? And then I think, you know what? I've got a first world problem. There are many, many people in this world that have suffered far greater than my sporting career not being as I wish it to be. And I think this comes with becoming older as well. You look at the suffering that people go on, and I live an incredibly privileged life, I feel. And I feel that it's very, like, how many people in their life can be at the top end of any sport or their job for 46 years and still want to continue on with it? And the places I've been, the people I've met, the countries I've driven through, I just think I am just so, so privileged. And this is what keeps me so excited about what I'm about to do in upcoming events, to go to events and to go to places and see people. And for sure, I like my private time where it's just me and Steffi and the children, but we also like to be with people that we enjoy being with.
Mm. You've had a lot of amazing horses, I think. But you know this question, what are there ones you can say they shaped you the most as a rider?
That's a really good one. If I go back to my first pony that I ever had, because Oscar, my son, who is 6 years of age, when I was driving home last night, he said, Daddy, how old were you when you started riding? And I said, 6, Oscar, the same age as you. And he said, what was your first pony called? And I said, my first pony was called Ginger. He was a chestnut Shetland pony that I borrowed from my uncle. And I often joke about this, because this did not lead me to a good sporting career, this little pony, because I couldn't get him to do anything. I couldn't go the places I wanted to go.
The chestnut pony, what did you expect?
And then I joke and say, well, if you can get a Shetland pony to go from point A to point B on the line that you want to ride and the speed that you want to travel, you will be an Olympic athlete for sure. And so, but I like, so if I start there as with my first pony, and then you move on through the next ponies, and then I went with the camp drafting, as I said before, I learned a lot with the camp drafting. Then I got, in a way, my first horse, which was my pony club horse. I was 15 years of age, and he was 5 years of age when I got him, and that was the horse that took me to two Olympic Games, the two Olympic selections, one being Moscow, and two World Championships, and I won Burley with him. Now, if if someone had said to me at the time, you'll be taking this horse to Olympic Games and World Championships and you'll win one of the biggest events in the world, I would have said, well, I'd like to jump around a meter 10 show jumping round first. And I think this is, I cannot step away from recognizing my first horses in my career. And I look at the horses that I have now and the horses that I've had all throughout my career. I think I've been incredibly privileged to have such wonderful horses, but I've been incredibly privileged to work with such wonderful people that have helped me to make them, and it's been a complete team effort to be able to have these horses perform really, really well. I am not going to take the individual credit for my career. It's been a career up until now that has been fully supported by really good people around me, and I'm probably 10% of what I of the success. I think there's 90% of my success that probably goes down to many other people. And look, this is the first time I probably put it into a percentage term, but I just want all of your listeners to understand that to get to the top of any sport or business, I believe to be respected, you've got to be respectful. And even if someone says something to you, look, why don't you try something? I've often thought, I'm not sure about that. And then I've reflected on the comment and I've thought, okay, well, maybe there's part of that that is good, and I should try that. And it's not about going out and looking for new ideas. I think the really important thing for me is to keep going back to the base and the foundations of everything that I do. Number one, if I look at myself, if I want to stay in the sport, number one, I need to be healthy. So my health is important to me. Number two, for the horses to be healthy, I need to make sure that they have a good routine and good management. Now, people go to university to study nutrition, to study veterinary science, to study physiotherapy, to study biomechanics. So I've got to draw on these people. I can't do that. I've got to have faith in people who I put there. And I do see this a lot, that people, especially I would say younger people, but this is not the younger people of today. I think everyone goes through this stage, that they go somewhere and they say, oh, well, I've learned as much as I can learn here. I now want to go somewhere else. And with that, I feel if you are thinking of going and basing yourself with someone or taking on board something that someone's wanting to do as in relation to training or caring, helping you to care for your horses in a good manner, you've got to understand their philosophy. You've got to understand what has put them there, and why are they continually there. And well, yeah, like there are many things that I've done in my life that I thought, well, I'm not sure that this is really going to work, but I've stuck at it, and I've had faith in the people helping me. And I I think this is the thing. Like, the coaching of today is absolutely fantastic. And that, look, there are some very good young people out there, but I'm working with people that are actually quite a lot older than myself, and what they actually have is they have wisdom. And you can have knowledge but not wisdom. But if you have wisdom, you've also got knowledge.
Right. Like you tell about Captain Mark Phillips or Christoph Hessen.
Yeah.
Someone like this.
Right? And Nelson Pessoa. Like, oh, yeah. These are the three people I'm working with. Now, there are other good show jumping coaches, there are other good dressage coaches, and there are other good cross-country coaches. But the three names that you've just said, those people, if you put those three people into one room the knowledge that they have is just phenomenal. The experience and the wisdom that they have, and none of them are dogmatic and they say, well, you have to do A, B, C, and D. They talk about things and they say, well, I really think it would be a good idea if you really try this. And if I say, well, look, I'm finding this a challenge to understand and a challenge to understand the feeling, they all go back to basics. They both, like Mark Phillips, Christoph Hess, Nelson Pessoa, they all go back to the basics. And this is one thing that I'm really strong with as well, going back to the basics. And if I cannot canter over a pole 10 times, getting it exactly to the right place, with correct rhythm, correct balance, to the correct takeoff point for the horse, then why is a meter 20, a meter 30, a meter 40 going to be easier? Why is it going to be easier when I've got speed? It's just that when you've got speed, the speed covers up so it can cover up so many things. And because you train at a lower level, that doesn't mean that you accept things that are not right. As to how low can you accept things, it's how good can you be at getting it right. Christoph Hess says, if it's almost right, it's 100% wrong. And I think that's a fantastic saying.
But it's also hard, or not?
Yeah. It is hard. But I take it in such a positive way, because it's like if you're doing a walk canter transition, well, yeah, like it's almost right. Well, it's 100% wrong, because it's not right. Mm. And so it's what level of wrongness of doing something wrong do you want to accept? Or how good does it have to be for it to be good? Mm. How correct does it have to be for it to be good? It's either correct or it's 100% wrong.
All right. What do you look for in future event horses? Because you have, some young horses here. And how do you look at them when you see them the first time?
Mm. Yeah, like, I think that's a really good question. And number one, when I walk into a stable, or I walk in to see a horse that I could be interested in, I just look at its demeanor. And what do I mean by demeanor? I mean just the way it stands there, the way it moves. I mean the way it looks around, just its body language is what I look at. I look at the body language of the horse. And then I look at confirmation of the horse. Now, confirmation, I've seen horses at Olympic Games that have not got great confirmation, but they've been incredibly well managed. The horse has got the heart as big as a house. The rider rides the horse to the horse's ability, and they've had great performances. And so I think the body language of the horse, how the horse, the conformation of the horse, how the horse moves, like walk is important to me. Trot, you can always improve trot. Quality of canter. And I was about to say the horse has to look like an athlete. But I feel what I want to say to that comment is the horse has to move in a good way. Now, I've taken horses on that definitely haven't looked like athletes. But it's not a 2-week process or a 2-month process. It's sometimes a 2 to 4 year process to really turn them around. And I mean, turn them around so that you work with them. You work with the personality and you work with the ability of the horse and you work with the well-being of the horse. But number one, the horse has to be healthy. It has to have a good brain that you can work with. And then you have to understand as a rider the challenges that a horse has, but that's normally a reflection of the way that you work the horse or you work with the horse. Because over the years, I've seen horses galloping past in the distance on the cross-country course, and I know exactly whose horse it is or who's riding it because the way it goes. Horses are a product of us as individuals. And I can go away from my stables and I can come back, and just by spending 5 to 10 minutes with each horse, whether I'm just handling the horse or sitting on the horse, I've got a complete understanding as to how well they've been cared for while I've been away. Mm. Because horses do not lie.
Oh, that's true.
Horses are a product of the people that work with them, and they do not have it in their brain to say, well, here comes Andrew today, I'm going to make sure I make his life difficult.
No.
Whereas you can sometimes, with working with people,
yeah, no, that's a completely different story.
can be completely different. Whereas with horses, it has to be progressive. It has to be consistent. And it has to be respectful. You follow those three things, you'll always find a good way.
That's a good point for the next question, because tell us a little bit about your current horses. Like, who excites you the most for the next big championship, or what are your next plans? Or
yeah, like Vasily is I think a horse that I've worked with him for 8 years now, and it's like putting a pair of shoes on that you've worn for many years, and probably you go back a few years, you would have shoes that would last for years, whereas nowadays with materials and the way things are made, they're made very differently. But I think everyone probably understands what I'm saying when I say that. Vasily and I have got total respect for one another. I've got total respect for Vasily. He just absolutely loves competition. If I load my lorry at home to drive to a show and he's not on, he just gets, like, his behavior changes. And as soon as he's being got ready to go on the track, he's so excited and he's so happy, and you can just see it in his body language, in his eye. You get to a show, he has moments where he's just resting, he has moments where he's just looking around a lot, and very, I would say, very busy. Like, he in his stable, he can weave quite a lot, and he's actually the first horse that I've ever had in my career where he, pardon me, where he weaves, but I've tried everything to try and stop this. But people who really understand horses' behavior, they say that normally they're very intelligent horses. And what's the definition of intelligent? I think that Vasily is a horse that he's very much aware of his attributes. He's a complete athlete, like to be able to gallop and run cross country. He's very careful with the way that he jumps. He's got an, I would say, probably one of the best jumping records that I've ever had of any horse. In the 8 years of me in at FEI level, he's had a total of 4 rails done. And with that, at one of my last competitions, I had 2 rails in one round. Was I upset by this? No. When I came out of the arena, I was just reflecting on it, and I thought, I was just rusty. Like I just wasn't on my A game to have him absolutely right to every fence. And I think that I always look at what I've done first, and I don't blame the horses ever in this situation. And I think that, like, he's just very, very special, and I really look forward to continuing competitions with him. I have a new horse called Gulliver Delon. He is a phenomenal horse. I think he's unbelievably talented in the dressage, and I would say at this stage, I might be 50% of where I believe he could go with that. his cross country. I ride, I think, quite different from the way he's been ridden in the past, and that's not a criticism. That's just an observation of mine. And so, I want to find a style and a technique with him that is really good. His show jumping is just phenomenal as well. Like, he's just an extraordinary jumping horse. I've taken him just to some show jumping. I've had him since January. I've done very few competitions. He has changed immensely in his muscle development. I think he's still 18 months, 2 years off being where I really would like him to be. And I've been asked before this, sorry, this is changing the subject a little bit, what do I really look for in a horse? And it's I really try to work towards harmony. That's what I really try to work towards. Going back to the horses, I've got an unbelievably talented young horse called Castle Cornet. I think that he is just, he's a really tall horse.
Very, very tall.
I think that the one thing that I've learned in my career is just to give horses time. I think that's something that I'm really pleased that I've learned, that to give horses time, not be in a hurry. I think there's another horse I'm still finding the way with that I think is really talented as well, is Castle Cornet. Sorry, not Castle Cornet. That's who I was just speaking about. But Aaron Copland, I think that he will be good. But again, it's about finding the right formula and the right way with him. And then there's a four-year-old that I think is that's come into the stable this year. Every time I see him, I just feel, and I've got a work writer with me that's doing some work with him at the moment, and every time I see her on him, Jemima Hughes is her name, and she's sitting on Austin, I say, well, look, I think I really like this horse. I really think this horse is going to be a real powerhouse. He's behaving like a four-year-old at the moment. Like, just got to give him time. But time will tell with all of these things.
But to ask a little concrete, to ask a little more concrete, so is the World Championship next year a goal?
Yeah, I think so. because I've also got another horse that I haven't mentioned, which is Cadet de Bellier. And I would like to have three horses qualified for next year. And I think that it's Vasili, Cadet, or Gulliver. And I think that they're all horses that I think they'll tell their own story. And I'm trying to do my best by each horse.
You are a very speedy rider, I would say, a very fast rider. Could you tell us a secret how to ride that fast?
I've always loved speed. And when I say I've loved speed, my father was involved in motor racing and grew up as an engineer. He studied engineering and then went farming. So I had that speed element I've had it in my DNA right from when I was born. I've just always loved speed, like whether I was on my bicycle or didn't matter what I was doing, I just loved to have speed. But going back to the real question as to what is needed, it all comes back to rhythm. And rhythm is, you watch anyone that is incredibly quick, they just have rhythm, and it seems to be effortless with what they do. And with learning this, absolute guaranteed you're going to make mistakes, and it happens where things don't work and you make mistakes. And the important thing is that you learn from the mistakes. It's not about the successes that make people good. It's about the failures that make people good, and that they actually learn from them. And the thing that this was something that my dad taught me as well with motor racing, that you had to be very smooth. And I can remember him when I was young, he was talking to me about the balance of a car, and it just went through my mind, like, what on earth are you talking about? Because it's got four wheels, it's got an engine at the front, and you sit in the middle, and then you've got a steering wheel. But it was only through him explaining that as to how to get the cars into corners. He said, you can either get a car into a corner in balance or out of balance. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, like, what are you talking about? But I did have a motor racing license at one stage, and you really learn what he was talking about. That's also what I try to do with my horses. There, like, being I never like to load my horses. I never like to put a lot of pressure on their structure. And so I try to be really economical with the way that I ride and with the way that I go through corners. And I hate it if horses are slipping, because if they're slipping, number one, you've got them out of balance and you're going too fast. And you can often have the same speed, but a horse in balance, and you can get around the corner really easily. And I'm fascinated to watch MotoGP racing. Like, those boys on those bikes, they are just phenomenally good at keeping the bikes in a real balance. And so that's just a fascination of mine. Driving, I always find driving to the shows, I use that to set myself up for speed. Not that I go beyond speed limits, but it's how smoothly can I get through corners without being slow and without being crazy fast. It's I'm all the time, whenever I'm driving, I always am aware of how the horses are standing in the back and the ride that I'm giving them. And it's not that I would say I go slowly, but I try not to go quickly and have the horses out of balance and extreme braking, extreme acceleration and that kind of thing. And so I've used that for many years as a guide to also set myself up for my cross-country riding.
Yeah, because we walked, I think, 1.5 years ago or something, we walked a course together, and it's still a very, very big inspiration for me to look back at our pictures we did and what did you say, and that you don't get your seconds or get your time with going faster in between the fences or something like this. You just have the rhythm, and then it all comes a little bit to what it is. But the rhythm is most of the thing. It's not, I think, very easy at the beginning, because you have to have more speed to the fence than you normally maybe have in your mind or in your normal rhythm. But when you get used to it, it's much more easier.
Yes. And like I spoke about the rhythm, but it's also, where do you look? Like, that was something, one thing that my father spoke with me about a lot. And my mother was also very good at sport, which I've only found out in the last few years that she was captain of the sports team at school. Well, I had no idea of that. It's where do you look and what are you looking at? That's a key factor. It's the rhythm that you have, and the harmony that you have with the machine that you're working with, or with the horse that you're working with, and it's about going with them as well. And that's where I always look at myself first, because if I'm not strong in my posture. Now, what does strong in your posture mean? It doesn't mean that you're strong and against the horse. You've got to be strong to be able to work with the horse. And so that comes back to core stability. It comes back to how healthy you are physically as well. And I think I would say this is one thing, and I was only talking with someone the other day about this. This is one thing that I've really noticed as to how the top riders now in today's world look like real athletes. Mm. Yeah.
True. If you could give one piece of advice to a young event rider starting today, what would it be?
I've already said it, and it's give yourself time.
Not to be in a hurry.
Time to understand. Not be in a hurry to people are very good at working out their end goal, where they want to get to. But it's how you actually get there is the key. Because I've seen many athletes over the years, they get to the goal, but they never stay there. they're in the sport for a really short time, because it's a personal desire for them. And it's not, they're trying to prove something. Mm-hmm. The only person you have to prove something to is yourself, not to everyone else. And I've had so much joy at times through not actually winning a competition. And so I think it's really important that you put it into perspective as to who are you trying to please in this world. If you're happy with yourself, you'll be happy with life.
Also true. I have a very interesting question. When people look at Andrew Hoy, what do you hope they will say about you?
I don't know that I've ever been asked that question. I think that, right, I would like it that people thought I was really respectful of my horses, and that my horses always look in good health, that they're good in that respect. I always feel we don't have shop windows to display our product, but my horses are my shop window. And the way I present myself is my shop window. And I used to be a very big party goer, but I used to be. But I've.
That was before we met.
Yes. Yes. What I've changed there is the fact that I now just of an evening, because I'm not living at the stables, I live away from the stables, and every time I get home I give Steffi a hug and I say I just love coming home, and I love the fact that we've got a really, we've got two healthy children and we are healthy. What more could we want for in life? We haven't got the smartest house. We haven't got, there are many people with so much more wealth than we have, but we have health, and that is your greatest gem in life, health, and then everything else you can deal with. And it's not until people don't have their health that they realize how everything else is just not important. Everything. It doesn't matter how much money, you can be the wealthiest person in the world, but if you don't have health, it doesn't matter how much money you've got. Yeah. And so I think, look, this is only through becoming older that I've started to realize these things, because I've lived life to the absolute fullest. I've lived what I do to the absolute fullest, and I am still passionate about what I do, and health is one of the greatest things. My mother is 98 years of age and she is still so healthy and still driving, and still driving the zero turn lawnmower, and still managing the property in Australia and two properties and two houses, and like, I'm just in awe of what my parents have done. And I think the thing that's made me appreciate this the most is that I've got two children. And it's made me appreciate what my parents did for me. And Steffi is exactly the same. She's so appreciative of what her parents have done for her. And then the children come flying in through the door from another room, and the hurricane has hit us. And so I think it's having children has actually helped me put life into perspective. Mm-hmm. And the challenging times, and I'm much better at working through the challenging times, because I can remember being at one show and I had a horse standing up in the dressage and it didn't canter when I wanted to canter, and then it trotted when it shouldn't have been when it should have been walking. And I come out of the arena and Philippa, who was only I think about 4 years of age at the time, she's jumped up and down with joy and said, "Daddy, that's the best dressage test I've ever seen you do." And I'm thinking, I came out absolutely horrified by the whole thing, and my daughter's saying, "Well, that was fantastic because it wasn't so boring." And so, and I think that's actually helped me. But yeah, I think I've moved on from a little bit from the question, but I think that I want people to just feel that I care for my horses in a good way, and that I'm a good ambassador for the sport.
Very cool. We are nearly at the end of the podcast because we're now talking for an hour or something. But I have three final questions, very short ones, that I ask every podcast guest. So that's very interesting what they say then. So what does equestrian sport mean to you?
What does it mean to me? Good question. It means it takes my life and to fulfillment. Like travel, like working with the horses, absolute joy working with the horses, because there's not one horse that answers back. It's just they're a product of how I work with them.
Yeah. If Vasily could talk, what would he say about you?
Come on, get on with it.
And which person in the eventing world should I definitely invite to the podcast?
The person that I would have said if they were still here with us, who understood the sport, was Queen Elizabeth II.
I don't think that I could invite her.
But like, she would be just fascinating about her equine knowledge and the feeling that she had for the horses. And like, Princess Royal, Princess Anne is her daughter, and so she was very much aware of what this was involved in the sport, and she'd been to badminton Burley many times, and for sure you can't, but that's, and I had the privilege of meeting the Queen on many occasions, and so she was just a fascinating lady to speak with. The Princess Royal.
Okay. Good try for me. Oh, thank you so much, Andrew. This has been very special, very deep, I think. Yeah, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Was für eine Ehre, dass sich so viel Zeit für mich und euch genommen hat. Und wie viel Inspirierendes einfach gesagt hat. Ist doch einfach so krass. Ich konnte selbst so viel mitnehmen, vor allen Dingen, was die Low Moments angeht. Aber ich finde auch zum Thema Rhythmusreiten oder wie sich der Sport verändert hat in all den Jahren, wo er eigentlich herkommt, dass er halt Farmer war oder dass er sogar mal Rodeo-Reiten gemacht hat. Vieles davon wusste ich noch nicht, obwohl ich ja schon einige Jahre mit ihm zusammenarbeiten darf. Und das macht den Podcast ja auch besonders, mit solchen Persönlichkeiten nicht nur sprechen zu dürfen, sondern das auch für die Nachwelt und eben euch alle festzuhalten. Ich hoffe, ihr hattet genauso viel Freude, die Folge zu hören, wie ich, sie aufzunehmen. what an honor that he took so much time for me and you, and how much inspiring stuff he said is just crazy. I learned so much more about the low moments, but I also found the topics of riding rhythm, how the sport has changed, where he actually comes from, and that he even rode rodeo at one point really interesting. I didn't know much of that, even though I've been working with him for several years. And that's what makes the podcast so special, not only being able to talk to such personalities, but also recording it for posterity and for all of you. I hope you enjoyed listening to the episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. Vielen Dank an Conky's Own für die Unterstützung dieser Podcast-Folge. Wenn ihr in Australien lebt, findet ihr ihre hochwertigen Ergänzungsfuttermittel landesweit bei vielen Händlern und online. Für alle anderen, die informativen Beiträge zu Pferdeernährung auf den Social-Media-Kanälen von Conky's Own sind definitiv einen Blick wert. Alle Links findet ihr wie immer in den Shownotes. A big thank you to Conky's Own for supporting this episode. For listeners in Australia, their premium equine supplements are available nationwide. For everyone else, their social media presence offers valuable insights into horse nutrition and management. Definitely worth exploring. All links are included in the show notes. Was kommt als nächstes? Ich denke, Anna Sima ist wieder dran. Ich hoffe sehr, dass wir zeitnah einen Termin für die Aufnahme finden. Noch ist sie nicht im Kasten, aber da bleibe ich natürlich für euch dran. What's next? I think it's Anna Sima's turn again. I really hope we can find a date for the recording soon. It's not in the can yet, but I'll stay on top of it for you, of course. Ich hoffe, die Folge hat euch gefallen. Wenn ja, freue ich mich riesig über eine Bewertung in eurer Podcast-App. Das hilft, dass noch mehr Pferdesportfans diesen Podcast auch entdecken. Folgt mir auch gerne auf Instagram, um keine Neuigkeit zu verpassen. Bevor wir zum Ende kommen, der Podcast bleibt natürlich kostenlos und das soll auch so bleiben. Wenn ihr Lust habt, mich zu unterstützen, könnt ihr mir gerne über PayPal an podcast@julis-eventa.de einen virtuellen Kaffee oder eine Möhre für die Pferde spendieren. Jeder Euro hilft und zeigt mir, was euch der Podcast bedeutet. Den Link findet ihr auch in den Shownotes. Vielen, vielen Dank und auch danke fürs Zuhören und bis zur nächsten Folge, wie immer am Donnerstag. Stay tuned. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, I would really appreciate a review. It helps more equestrian fans discover this podcast. Feel free to follow me on Instagram so you don't miss any news. Before we wrap up, the podcast is free, of course, and will remain so. But if you'd like to support me, you can buy me a virtual coffee via PayPal at podcast@julis-eventa.de. Every euro helps and shows me how much the podcast means to you. You can also find the link in the show notes. Thank you very, very much. Thank you for listening and see you next Thursday for the next episode. Stay tuned.
Der Julis Eventer Podcast aus der Welt der Vielseitigkeit. Staffel 5.